a little poker episode bright and early in the morning, but I'm here, happy as can be, ready to go for all of you. Today we're going to be discussing three hacks to crush online poker tournaments. These tips will apply live to some extent. They'll apply to cash games a little bit, but today we're going to be discussing specifically online poker tournaments. Before we get started, I returned home from Vegas the other day. I did marginally, I had 1/6th place out of about 8 tournaments, which is, you know, okay, doesn't pay the bills, but such is life. However, poker coach and coach extraordinaire Aram Zobian won the entire series. I won the Poker Go Cup. See the cup down there? I won the Poker Go Cup last series. Aram won the Golden Eagle this series. So poker coach and coaches are crushing it. I love playing in the Poker Go studio. A big benefit of playing there is that they give you good publicity and they're going to put all these on TV, and that's good. Just the other day, I returned home from Las Vegas and I played in a $400 buy-in poker tournament. I didn't even know I was going to play it. I showed up, and guess what? Can you see this? It says champion. I won a $10,000 main event seat, a cute bracelet. It's actually my third. It's actually not my third. My wife won one as well. So we're continuing to stack the trophies. I'll take it. 3 tournament wins this year for me, plus 1 in November. Let's keep it up. Can you imagine the run I've been on? It's actually been pretty good. 3 tournament wins in like 30 tournaments or something like that. Amazing. Today, though, we are going to be discussing 3 hacks to crush online poker tournaments. Number one. Find a game you can beat. No, this is not the standard find a game you can beat played a lot to keep a proper bankroll advice. But this is really important for online poker, because if you do not have an edge, you will lose in the long run. And a nifty thing about online poker is that you figure out pretty quickly if you are a winner or a loser in the games, because you play many more hands per hour. If you're playing live poker, you may play 25 hands an hour in a tournament, maybe 30. Whereas when you're playing live, you can play something like 25 or 30 hands an hour. Online, you can play more like 40 or 50 hands per hour. So you figure out, in theory, twice as fast if you're winning or losing. And that's if you're only playing one table at a time. If you play 4 tables at a time, now you're playing 200 hands an hour. Something like 7 or 8 times more than you play in live poker. If you're playing 8 tables at a time, well, now we're looking at 15 times as much per hour as you play in live poker. And therefore, the edge that you have will become somewhat clear somewhat quickly. So it is vitally important that you play in games where you have an edge, because you're going to get demolished if you don't. It's a little bit different than live poker, because in live poker, you can play a long time without an edge and it won't actually cost you all that much equity. I mean, sure, it's not good. You're losing money, but you're just playing so slowly to the point that you can put in a lot of time, whereas time essentially it goes way faster when you're playing online. Your wife won a tournament too. She did. She won She won a $1,000 buy-in tournament recently in New York. 50-person, $1,000 buy-in tournament. Pretty cool. I actually have a bunch of these trophies up here. Can you see? I have 1, 2, 3. There's another one back there. 4. I have 2 first, a 3rd, and a 6th. I think I'm one of the few people who has 2 of the New York Super Series tournaments. Maybe the only one. That's fun. Anyway, you want to say hi? We're talking about you. We're talking about how you won that $1,000 buy-in tournament the other day.
Hi. Which one?
None of these. The bracelet? Oh, that's your trophy up there. That's her trophy over there. Can you not see it? We'll pull it down. She won the biggest one. Look at Amy. She got first place. You see?
Hi.
How cool. Who do you think's better at poker? Me or you?
I don't even think that's a fair question to ask.
Okay.
Everyone knows the answer.
I have to do this show now. Find a game you can beat. Play a game where you have an edge.
Love you.
Love you too.
Have a great day. Good luck. Good luck.
Bye-bye. Shut the door, please. Okay. If you don't have an edge, you'll lose in the long run. Therefore, what should you do to ensure you have an edge, at least in the beginning, at least while you're trying to figure out what you're doing? Well, you need to study a ton. You need to play a little and study a lot. Just like anything in life, if you want to get good at it, you need to study. If you do not study, you're just guessing. And if you're guessing and your opponents are not guessing because they've studied a little, you're going to get absolutely demolished. Okay? Next, you need to play low buy-ins in the beginning. A lot of people think that they should just hop in and play online tournaments of roughly the same buy-in that they play live tournaments. And that would be an absolute disaster. Because if you play, let's say, $100 buy-in tournaments live, which are relatively small buy-ins live, and you hop into $100 buy-in tournaments online, you're going to be in pretty rough shape because $100 tournaments online are pretty tough. Because the players who play $100 buy-in tournaments a decent amount figure out quickly if they're winning or losing, just like they do in every other stake online. But essentially, the players in the... Well, people can't be losing $100 buy-ins over and over and over again at a very consistent basis. Unlike live poker, where if you play one or two tournaments a week and you lose $100, it's not that big of a deal. Online, if you're losing 20 buy-ins a week, that starts to become a pretty detrimental thing for most people unless they make a ton of money, right? So, essentially, the games online are way tougher than they are live at comparable stakes. So, you need to start playing really small initially. And a lot of people don't like this. They want to think that they're way better than they are. They don't want to study. They want to hop into big games. And it doesn't work. Hate to break it to you. Also, keep excellent track of your results. There are programs like Hold'em Manager, Poker Tracker, Poker Copilot. There are a few others for various sites. Some programs work with some sites. Some don't work with other sites. You got to figure out which site you play on or which sites you play on and then find a tracker that works for you. But you must keep track of your results. This applies to both live and online. But it's vitally important online because it's really easy to miss results if you do not have a program tracking it for you, because if you're playing multiple tables at a time, you can't easily manually record all of this. That's going to lead to you making mistakes. So you need a program. So get one of those programs and track your results. If you don't track your results, you're not going to know if you're winning. If you don't know if you're winning, well, you don't know if you're playing in a game that you can beat. And that's the number one thing you have to do. What is my wife's favorite poker coaching coaches? Or my favorite? Wait, what are my favorite courses? Oh, what are my favorite courses? I personally enjoy the Advanced Tournament and Cash, the Advanced Tournament Masterclass. I'm sorry, my brain's broken. I enjoy the Advanced Tournament course and the Advanced Cash Game course. I learned a lot in the process of helping the coaches put together their content. I learned a lot going through a bunch of simulations and data that Justin Saliba provided to us. So that's very, very, very good stuff that I would highly recommend. I've also been playing a lot of live cash games recently, and the content by Jonathan Jaffe is excellent for that. I'm punching above my weight. What's my favorite online site? I don't know. Two poker crushers, indeed. What are you supposed to tip when they ask after you win? The question becomes, are they already taking rake or tip money from the prize pool? Most casinos make it somewhat clear how much tip money they are taking. If your casino takes 3% from the prize pool for the dealers, floor staff, etc., as tip money, you should not feel inclined to tip anything additional. For example, if you go to a restaurant and they take 18% tip, should you feel inclined to tip anything additional? No, they already took the tip. In poker, if they take 3% of the prize pool, they already took a tip from everybody. Now, can you tip more? Sure. Feel free. I usually tip a little bit on top, but you got to realize 3% is a lot, and they're taking it from every player in every prize pool for the staff, right? Not trying to be stingy here, but it is what it is. Should you count your min cashes into your return on investment? Yes. The way you figure out your return on investment, you take your profits total and divide it by the buy-ins, and that will give you your return on investment. Min cashes obviously count towards your total profits. What do they take at the World Series? At the World Series of Poker, they take a very high rake to begin with. They're some of the highest raked tournaments of those buy-ins, and then they do take, I think, 3% for the dealers. So if they're taking a high rake and money on top for tip, no, you should not feel inclined to tip anything whatsoever. That said, I get that the dealers are not getting the rake money. That's just the casino being perhaps a little greedy. But is what it is. Imagine they rake 35%. Should you feel inclined to tip anything? Probably not. What are the names of some programs for the results? Programs that keep track of your results are Hold'em Manager, Poker Tracker, and Poker Copilot for Macs. Okay? Number two, you need to get a lot of experience. Why? Because your opponents online are already going to have a massive amount of experience compared to you and everybody else, at least the regulars will. So you are going to want to make a point to learn to play as many tables at the same time as you reasonably can. Now, this does not mean you should play as many as you possibly can, because then you're going to be going click, 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 and you're not going to be making reasonable decisions. Okay? So you want to learn to play as many tables as you can. How can you reasonably do this? Well, when you first start playing online poker, you're going to be playing one table at a time, probably like everybody else does, because that's what you do in live poker, right? So start with one, but realize when you're playing one tournament at a time, most of your time is spent sitting there doing nothing or close to nothing. So you might as well add another one. Now that you're playing two, maybe things start to get a little bit more hectic, but that's probably because you're focusing on things that don't really demand focus. A lot of people want to see which hands win at the whenever you get it all in, for example. Say you get it all in with ace, king against jacks. A lot of people want to look, sit there and watch the table. They want to see how the cards come out. 9, 7, 6, 4, king. Yes! Get all that out of your head. You do not need to sweat the action ever. Doesn't matter. Because you're going to know, based on if you're still in the tournament or not, or if you have a little chips or a lot, if you won the hand. You don't have to watch to see if you actually won the hand. It doesn't really matter. You do need to pay attention to things like hands people showdown at the river, right? You need to get that valuable information. By the way, when you're playing on most online sites, if it does go to showdown, you can actually click some sort of button to find the most recent hand history. And that will tell you what both players had at the showdown, even if they did not have to show. Like, say you're playing live poker on the river. Say you bet the river and your opponent calls and you show your hand and you win and they muck. You don't get to see your opponent's hand. But online, you can click a button to show the hand history and it will show you what they had. It's very, very important. So make sure you're paying attention to the things that actually matter, like relevant information, and not things like this guy raised a time or two preflop, therefore I think he's loose. You know, like you don't need to make up a bunch of nonsense. So how do we start playing more tables? Well, I recommend you move down to much lower stakes than you are used to, or stakes that are normal for you, and then play a decent amount more than you think you would be comfortable with. So let's say you normally want to play $10 buy-in tournaments online. Move down to $1 buy-in games or one penny buy-in games. It doesn't matter. You're not playing for the money here. You're playing for the experience. And let's say you normally play two tables at once. Load up four and play for a few hours. And you're going to find that that's going to get you somewhat used to playing at that pace. And once you get to four, and you're really comfortable playing four for a penny or a dollar or whatever it is, go back up to your normal game. And then, if you want to practice adding more tables, go back down to tiny stakes and load up six or eight. I did this all the way until I can get to 24. Now, at 24, I start to time out. If you're timing out, ever, you're playing too many games. So, I personally cap it at about 16 for me. If I can play 24 with roughly no problem, little problems here and there, 16 is a breeze. Right? And that's what you want to do. Essentially, you want to find the spot where you are really, really pushing it and straining to play all the tables at once while still, you know, focusing to the best of your ability. And then play a decent amount fewer than that. What a lot of people do wrong is they play as many tables as they possibly can and think that that's normal. And they also don't really practice the skill of playing more tables. Okay? Playing more tables also has the benefit of you playing more hands, therefore more tournaments, and putting in a whole lot more volume. And this allows you to realize your win rate faster, whatever it is. Like we mentioned earlier, online games are usually tougher than live for the same stakes. You're going to find that if you normally play, let's say, $100 buy-in tournaments with a 30% return on investment, you may be playing $10 tournaments with a 10% return on investment online because the games are a whole lot tougher. Right? And so because the games are a whole lot tougher, your edge is going to be smaller. Therefore, you need to put in a lot more volume to actually realize that edge. Right? you all have some questions. Let's see. You appreciate the work. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you, Zhao. Let's see. You like Taylor Swift. Good for you. You play on a site that can't run Hold'em Manager or Poker Tracker. See, so Google the name of your site and then search Poker Tracker or something. See what comes up. No one clicked the like button today. Well, that's fine. The tipping is easy. It's easy to tip too much. You watch what others do and you follow. Well, look, you got to realize some people don't tip nearly enough. Some people tip way too much. I would not recommend you follow what other people do. You need to just use some logic. How do you select the hands you want to study? Well, if you're using a poker tracker program, you can literally tag all of your hands that you think are relevant. There'll be a little button near the top of the, like, imagine, can you see this here? There'll be a little icon somewhere at the top of the table, like up here. You can click a button. There'll be a little drop down to mark a hand. You can mark the hand, and then you can go through and look at it later. And then just mark them all, right? No, or mark all of them that you think you should look at later. And then do it. Go through. Study a lot. I mean, whenever I used to play a ton of sit-and-goes online, I would study literally every single hand that I played. And when I say study, I mean some of them were obvious, right? But a lot of them weren't. There was this program back then that was essentially a GTO program, a simple GTO program, and you could go through every single hand you played. And I did that for years, right? I mean, just this morning, I was going through hands that I played in the recent $25,000 buy-in tournament in the PokerGo studio. How did I lose that? I'm sitting here thinking, how did I lose that? Oh, I had a flip. Fine. A pair and flush draw and straight draw against top pair, and I lost. Whatever. But I've gone through every single hand that I thought is worth noting in various ways. So anyway, study a lot. How do you stop autopiloting? You're probably playing too many tables if you're autopiloting, or maybe you're not playing enough. It's tough to say. You will always want to be thinking about what you are doing and why, right? If you're sitting there just clicking buttons, then yeah, you're probably not going to play especially well. Now, look, I will say some people's autopilot's pretty good. I think my autopilot's pretty good. But you have to make a point to not just sit there and click buttons. You instead want to be sitting there and actively thinking about playing poker. How do you develop a competition mindset? You get scared to bet and raise and sometimes make the passive play. Look, if you think a play makes money, making that play will make you the most money possible, right? If you simply make the play that feels comfortable because you think it'll result in you busting less or something like that, then that's not necessarily ideal. I mean, you can fold every hand and last a pretty long time in tournaments, but that's not ideal. Should you satellite into tournaments? Probably not. I have an article. Search Jonathan Little satellites. It'll probably come up. Satellites are really, really bad for a whole lot of reasons for most people in most scenarios. I missed a question. Sorry. You want entry into the NFT poker tournament? I'll be there in about a month. How do you win? You're probably not. It's going to be a turbo and you're going to need to run hot. But hey, you're allowed to run hot. I ran hot the other night and won a 6-hour long tournament with 70 people. It can happen. Okay, tip number 3. Exploit specific players and exploit the player pool. Both. You have to do both of these things. So, if possible, use a heads-up display. The Poker Tracker, Hold'em Manager, Poker Copilot, all of these have a heads-up display that'll put a whole lot of stats on the screen. And they will tell you various things about your opponent. That's going to be beyond the scope of this video, what all the various stats mean. I'm sure you can search YouTube or Poker Tracker or Hold'em Manager. It'll come right up. And essentially, you want to figure out what your opponent's doing incorrectly. Obviously, if your site does not allow heads-up displays, don't use them. Don't cheat. Don't break the terms and conditions. Some people think, oh, it's not against the rules on some sites, so therefore it's not cheating on any site. Look, the sites make their own rules. You need to follow the rules of every site. Recognize some sites have rules like we can do whatever we want as the site owner, and we can ban you whenever we see fit. So if they ban you, don't be sad. Don't be mad about it. I think it's really funny when a site says, we can ban you for literally any reason. And then they banned you for a reason like you're winning too much money, which some sites have done recently. And then players get mad. They think, hey, they banned me just because I'm winning too much money. Yeah, well, they said they could. Don't play there, right? You're allowed to vote with your feet. Just because the game exists does not mean that you have to play it. Maybe I side with the business owner a little too much in a lot of these spots. Maybe because I own a business. Because people try to screw me left and right. And, but look, obviously a site should not ban players for winning. Obviously, it's common sense. But they're allowed to. Okay. So, what do we mean by this? Against regulars, players who you play a lot with, who you will have a decent amount of stats on, you're going to want to exploit them based on their stats. So, say you see that they're playing far too tightly, right? Say they are playing 10% of hands and they're raising 8% of hands and they're 3-betting 4% of hands. Really, really, really tight. Well, if you raise with ace-jack offsuit, maybe ace-queen offsuit, and they 3-bet you, you should fold. It's annoying. You're not really trying to fold around here, but ace-queen and ace-jack are going to be in horrible shape against a 3, 4, 5% 3-betting range, so you should fold. Alternatively, say they 3-bet 32% of the time, ace-jack offsuit becomes the nuts, right? So if you see a player that you have a decent amount of stats on, meaning you have a decent number of hands, then you should really be adjusting to what they're doing correctly. And you want to get somewhat granular with this. I mean, like, you want to look at how often they continuation bet the flop on average. Some people are like 95%, which is way too high, especially in spots where they should not be continuation betting very often at all. Boards that are very bad for them, right? So in spots where your opponent should not be continuation betting very much, if you know they continuation bet 95% of the time, you're going to want to be check-raising them very aggressively because you know they're just not going to have anything on this board a lot of the time. What if you see your opponent, when they get to the showdown, they almost always have the winning hand? Well, that stat can go one of two ways. It either means they may be overfolding a lot when you bet the river, because they only call when they have the best hand, or maybe they only play good cards to begin with to some extent. Maybe it means that when they bet the river and get called, they almost always have the best hands. So you want to figure out which of these it is, right? So you want to get in there and figure that out. You'll win nothing and you'll be happy. It's the new normal. Yeah, well, don't play on those sites. How long until the free premium is live? I'm not 100% sure. Go to the site. Check it out. Preparing for the World WSPO Seniors event. I don't know what WSPO is. In June. What is ideal for you to study at PokerCoaching.com? Go through the Tournament Masterclass. That is vitally important. Going through the Tournament Masterclass is sort of a prerequisite to making good use of the site in general. If you do not understand the fundamentals, you're going to have a tough time making good use of the much more advanced content that is there. Should you treat low-stakes online two-day tournaments different than a normal one? No. A lot of people want to think that the structure of the tournament matters a ton and should drastically impact your strategy, and it should not. You just have to realize the effective stack size is much shallower in some tournaments compared to others. So essentially, a two-day tournament online is going to have a pretty slow structure, and therefore, you should realize you're going to be playing with a deeper stack for most of the tournament. That was WSOP Transportation, LOL. I don't know what a transportation means right here, but transportation? Transposition. Oh, you transposed it. Okay, good for you. Long story short, Tournament Masterclass. How long will the Tournament Masterclass take if you take it seriously? There is about 40 hours of video content. There's also about, I don't even know how many quizzes, 1,000 quiz questions. It's big. Fortunately, we broke it into 10-minute sections. 10-minute videos and 5 or 10 quizzes. 10-minute video, 5 or 10 quizzes. 10-minute video, 5 or 10 quizzes. Over and over and over and over and over again. So how long will that take you? I don't know. 60 hours, something like that total if you take your time. Next. What do you do against players who you don't have much data on? Say you're playing against someone and you have no clue what they do wrong because they are new to you. Well, you're going to want to exploit them based on how the recreational player pool plays in general. Now, sometimes it's going to bite you in the butt because some players who you have no stats on are going to play very differently than the player pool in general. But on average, let's say you know the players in small stakes games don't like bluffing all in on the river. Because I can tell you, they don't. You should be overfolding on average on the river against players who, in general, do not bluff the river often enough. So if you take a generic player you've never seen before in your life, and you know they're not a regular, because you have stats on most people, you should presume that they're not going to be bluffing the river often enough, which will result in you overfolding on the river right off the bat. And against most players, maybe 70% of them, that's going to make you more money on average. And against 30% of them, it's going to lose you a little bit of money on average. But on average, that's going to result in you making more money on average. Okay? So you're going to want to consider how players in the games in general play. A lot of players continuation bet a little bit too much on the flop. So you should be folding less on boards that are good for their range, and you should be raising more on boards that are good for your range. Now, how would you know that if you have not studied? You have to make sure you're studying poker. We discuss this thoroughly in, where do we discuss this exactly? This is in the advanced tournament course at pokercoaching.com. We have multiple videos on exploiting common things that players do incorrectly. Like, what do you do against someone who continuation bets the flop too often? A lot of people think, oh, call a lot. Or a lot of people think, raise a lot. But no. If the board is good for them, you call a lot more. If the board is good for you, you raise a lot more. Okay? You need a Poker Go class. I literally just launched a course on pokercoaching.com where I went through a ton of hands. I played when I won the two tournaments in the Poker Go Cup series. It came out like a week ago. How do you learn to multi-table? I literally just talked about that 10 or 15 minutes ago. Someone wanted to talk about satellites. Why are satellites bad? In a span of 210 tournaments, paid $3 average instead of $11. I'm going to quickly sum this up for you. Satellites have a very different structure than regular tournaments. So if you spend most of your time playing satellites, you are going to learn how to get in the money in a satellite. Getting in the money, the top 10% or so of a satellite, is fine and good, but that is not the goal of a regular tournament. The goal of a regular tournament is to get in the top 0.5% or top 1%, whatever it is, which demands a very different strategy. Most satellite players are far too weak and tight in the middle and late stages of the tournament because they think the goal is to get in the money. So you're going to be learning a strategy that is not ideal for the tournament you're going to be playing. Another big problem. You're going to be playing tournaments that are far bigger than you are used to or probably bankrolled for. If you normally play, let's say, $10 buy-in tournaments, $10 buy-in satellites, and you satellite your way into a $100 buy-in tournament, what in the world makes you think that you're qualified to play a $100 buy-in tournament with a different structure than you're used to? That'd be like me thinking, okay, I normally play $10,000 buy-in no limit tournaments, so this week I'm going to go play the $100,000 buy-in Pot Limit Omaha tournament. I'm okay at Pot Limit Omaha. I played some. To be fair, I might even have a tiny edge in the field. But that would be really stupid, right? It'd be really stupid of me to think I'm a $10,000 buy-in tournament player at No Limit Hold'em, and I'm going to go all of a sudden play a $100,000 buy-in game against good Pot Limit Omaha players. That'd be asininely dumb, right? Okay, fine. What's another problem with satellites? Well, say you cash your satellite 1 in 8 times because you're pretty good. Let's say you cash the No Limit Hold'em tournament 1 in 8 times because you're break-even. How often are you going to get money out? Well, that would be 1 in 64. And most of the time, 1/8 times 1/8, right? So that means every time you put in one buy-in, you're going to get money out 64 times. So you have to put in 64 times to get one cash. And often that cash is going to be a min cash in a tournament because that's how tournaments happen. So now you're looking at like 1 in 1,000 getting a decent score. That's a whole lot of volume to get one decent score. Have I made it clear that satellites are horrible yet? Even if you have an edge in them. Satellites are a good way to win your trip to somewhere, if you care about that. It's just more rake, honestly. Satellites are good if you have nothing else to do on a particular day and the satellite is in roughly the buy-in range you like to play anyway, and the tournament you're trying to satellite in is roughly in the buy-in range you want to play anyway. I'll give you an example. In Atlantic City, they used to have a $3,500 buy-in main event, and then the day before they would have $700 buy-in satellites where 1 in 5 people got in the money. So back then I wanted to play, let's say, $2,000 buy-in tournaments on average. $700 is a little small, whatever. $3,500 is a little big, whatever. So it's probably okay, right? I was like right in that sweet spot where I was going to play the $3,500 anyway, and I had nothing to do on the $700 day, so I mean, might as well. And that made some logical sense. But the idea of I'm just going to continuously try to satellite into stuff, it makes you spend a lot of time learning a game that, or getting experience in a game that is of a very different structure than the game you're satelliting into. You have to play substantially bigger stakes, and you basically never get an actual cash out of it. So don't do that. A lot of people, when they play online poker, they don't consider their opponent's strategies at all. They just try to play straight GTO in their heads, and the high stakes I'm talking about. And that's a big mistake. A lot of people think that you should just try to play as close to GTO as you can, and a lot of people cannot do that. And even if they can do that, that leaves a lot of money on the table, especially against the players who have big leaks in their game. You enjoy satellites, you play them for fun. We have to understand, I'm giving you advice from the point of view of you're trying to make as much money as possible and trying to get as good at poker as possible. If you do stuff for fun, that implies you don't care about winning and you don't care about getting as good as possible, right? For example, say I wanted to make as much money as possible. Would I ever recommend spending your time playing any other game besides exactly the game you want to get good at? The answer is no, because that's squandering your time. I mean, yeah, it's fun. It might be entertaining. I spend my time playing nonsense games. I like playing Hearthstone Battlegrounds for fun. It's not making me any better at poker. It's wasting my time. It's okay to have hobbies, but recognize that just means my main priority in life right now is not to get as good at possible as poker. And that's okay. If a satellite has an overlay, is it worthwhile? Again, depends. Worthwhile. What if, I mean, I'm not even going to go through the hypotheticals. Do the math. Imagine there's two people in the tournament and they're paying out as if there should be 40. Then yeah, it's probably going to be pretty good. Even if you're terrible at the tournament, it's going to be fine, right? But if there's supposed to be 40 and they're only 37, you're just like getting rake back, right? So it depends. What is the best GTO trainer for poker tournaments? Woo-hoo-hoo! Stay tuned to PokerCoaching.com. We got some fun stuff coming for you. Not going to go through all the various GTO trainers because they all teach you to play GTO. Did you literally hear what I just said? I literally just said, you should not be playing GTO against almost anyone in poker tournaments. Now, I'm all for learning GTO strategies. I'm all for, well, look, you need to know how to play GTO strategies so you know where to adjust from and where to adjust back to if you don't know what your opponent's doing incorrectly. Against the absolute best players in the world, yeah, you should probably be playing GTO because you don't know what they do wrong, most likely. But against the vast majority of mere humans, it's pretty obvious what they do wrong. I'll give you an example. In that tournament that I won just the other day for $10,000 in a World Series main event seat, which was just cash. In that tournament, we were at the final table and we had played maybe 30 hands. And then all of a sudden, a guy who had not played a hand yet raised to 2.5 big blinds under the gun, and it folded around to me on the button. And you know what I had? Ace-queen offsuit. You know where that ace-queen went? Right into the muck. I didn't think a second about it, because this guy had sat there and blinded out for 30 hands. Now look, maybe he got me. Maybe he tricked me. I know he didn't, because he had ace-king, because the player in the big blind called. They both flopped a king, and ace-king won. But that's a spot where, if I played GTO with my 14 big blind stack, ace-king would have been all, or ace-queen would have been all in, obviously, right? Instead, it hit the muck in half a second. Because I'm playing against my opponent, I figure out what they're doing, right? It's obvious. I've only played 30 hands with a guy, but he literally hasn't put a chip in the pot. It was the easiest fold of my life. It took, like, no thought, right? And that's because I'm not sitting there trying to play GTO poker. That would be a disaster against players who are doing something that's obviously incorrect. Now, usually people's mistakes are not going to be that obvious. And to be fair, maybe the guy just had really, really bad cards for 30 hands. But I folded in the guy at ace-king and it worked out. At what point should you seek out a coach? I mean, look, if you're not winning at poker, you should be getting a coach. And if you are winning at poker and you want to be moving up, you should be getting a coach. I think if you want to get good at anything and it's actually important to you, you should have someone who's already winning at it or doing well at it help you. You would argue that Hearthstone improves your poker. Nope. Well, look, more so than, let's say, sitting on the floor and doing nothing. obviously some games that are kind of close will help you get better at other games, but I don't think they help all that much, honestly. I think you'd much rather just be playing more poker or maybe like some other very similar poker game, right? Like say you normally play tournaments, play cash games, because that will help you with your early stage tournament play, right? Like obviously. Like saying I'm going to go play basketball, it helps with my poker. I mean, sure, I mean, maybe a little bit more than eating spaghetti, but like not really. People try to justify all sorts of stuff. And I found, at least in my life, I try to not make justifications for anything. Either it's obviously good or obviously bad most of the time. And sometimes things are close, of course, but like if I go and I eat a plate of spaghetti, does that help my poker? Well, yeah, because I'll definitely not be hungry at least for another few hours. That's something. I'll survive to be able to play the next tournament, hopefully. I'll be alive. That's something. But does it really help me play poker better? No, obviously not. If I go and play basketball, does that help me? I mean, maybe a little bit. You got to think ahead. You got to be consistent. Like, whatever, right? I mean, again, say whatever you want. But, like, does that really help you? No, not really. And I get that Hearthstone is closer to poker than eating spaghetti and playing basketball. But you'd still rather just be playing more poker or studying more poker. You get confused about what to do on the button against three bets. Well, check out PokerCoaching.com. We have GTO preflop charts. You're probably going to be a little bit looser than them because most people play a little bit too loose. Is there a difference between $100 buy-in tournaments and $10 buy-in tournaments? Yeah. As you play higher stakes, your opponents will be better. Doyle Brunson was a legend at basketball until he broke his legs. His leg, yes. He was drafted by who? The Lakers? Then he dropped a sheetrock slab on his leg and broke it. And then he became a poker legend instead. This is going to be it for today. I have to make a lot of YouTube videos this week. I'm going to Hershey Park later this week with my family. So we have a lot of work jammed into a short period of time for me. So I'm going to get to it. Let's go through the three hacks again to help you crush online poker tournaments. Number one, play in games you can beat. If you do not have an edge, you will lose. Number two, get a lot of experience. Everyone online who's playing today has a lot of experience. If you're behind, you better catch up. And this also has the added benefit of getting in a lot of volume, which will let you realize whatever edge you have. Number three, exploit specific players based on what they do wrong. And also exploit the player pool in general. Those two things will be vitally important to making sure you have as big of an edge as you possibly can. Should you take a break when you're on a downswing? You should be studying a lot. If you're studying and getting better and improving, then that is good. A lot of people think that downswing, you have to realize you don't really control the results in poker. And I know a lot of people don't like this idea, but in my mind, at least, and a lot of good players' minds, when you're at the poker table, you are simply implementing the strategy you've learned away from the table. That's all you're doing. And if you have not spent a lot of time learning a strategy away from the table, then you're just guessing. There's the idea of agency in games, meaning does my decision actually matter? And I think at the end of the day, almost none of your decisions in most games matter at all. What matters is the preparation you come to the table with. Like right now, if I had to go play against LeBron James in basketball, probably not going to work so well for me, right? He's bigger. That's not good. And something tells me he's probably practiced more than I have. I'm going to get demolished. If I play against my neighbor, who I don't even know if he's good at basketball, never played with him, I'd probably be okay, right? But you know what I'm saying, right? Essentially, you have almost no control once you're there because you are going to play your best. Anyone with a good mindset is going to go and implement their strategy to the best of their ability. Now, I will say, if you show up and you're a little bit tired, or maybe you did not have a good night's sleep, or you didn't eat right in the morning, or you're out of shape, maybe you start making poorer decisions at some point, maybe sooner than your opponents. For example, if you had to play a 24-hour-long poker session, I would bet some players would do far better than others on hour 22 and 23 and 24, despite the fact that they all start playing equally well. That's a different type of skill, right? But essentially, you are for any scenario where you can go and play well for the entire session because it's not overly mentally strenuous or long or whatever, you're just taking the strategy that you've developed ahead of time to the table and then you're implementing it. Like that ace-queen fold is a beautiful example. I was sitting there, 6 hours into this tournament. I had 5 or 6 drinks, and I could still play very good poker in my mind. When that guy, that type player, who had not raised for 30 hands, raised, alarm bells went off in my head as loud as they possibly could. I got the ace-queen and didn't think, ooh, loosey-goosey, have a sandwich all in. No. I'm like, okay, this guy has the nuts. I fold. Or, you know, this guy's range is probably very, very tight. I could be wrong. Maybe he has the jack-4 offsuit and decides to get us. I don't know. But I thought, more often than not, the guy probably has a really good hand. And me, probably not even thinking all that clearly. Actually, I was thinking perfectly fine because, come on, the guy hadn't played a hand in 30 hands. I folded, right? And how did I know to do that? I knew to do that because I've studied poker a ton, and I know when a guy plays no hands and all of a sudden he raises from under the gun, he probably has a pretty good hand, right? It's not rocket science here. And then I folded. And long story short, you have to study a lot away from the table. That is what you should be doing all the time. I study poker way more than I play poker today. Way more. Like, it's not even close. And I think that's the case for a lot of very good players, unless they are seriously grinding all the time. And that's what I'd recommend for you, too. So if you're on a downswing, first ask, is it just routine variance? If it's routine variance, then why do you care? Just normal. Get used to it. And, you know, if it's not routine variance, if you're actually losing, move down in stakes and make sure you're studying a ton. Should you late register? Should you late register? Depends. What are you trying to accomplish? Typically, if you register last second, it's thought you have a little bit of a return on investment right off the top of the deck. If you play very, very well with a 15 or 20 big blind stack, your average time in the tournament will be way less because you're probably going to lose in like an hour. That said, if you think you have an edge against people deep stack, you should definitely show up on time. I think I play better deep stack poker than most people, even at very high stakes. So I show up on time pretty much every time that I can, unless I have a really good reason not to. That said, a lot of the best online tournament players, best in quotes, they have studied how to play 40 big blinds and shorter exclusively. They don't have a clue how to play 200 big blinds deep. Because to be fair, it's like a whole nother game that they never have to play. If you always buy in last second, you don't actually spend a lot of time at the table, so your hourly rate will hopefully be pretty decent because you're not spending the first 4 hours of a tournament or something like that grinding away with a deep stack for a somewhat small amount of edge in terms of buy-in, chip stack at least. And they can just focus exclusively on like 40 buy-ins or 40 big blinds and shallower because you never have more than 40 big blinds whenever you buy in last second with 12 big blinds. It just doesn't happen very often, right? And if you do have more than 40, nobody else does, so you're playing the effective stack of less than 40. So that's actually not a bad strategy if you don't want to spend time studying deep stacked poker. What percent pop buttons should you have? More options than they give you. Sometimes you should be betting one big blind, sometimes 20% pot, sometimes 30% pot. You know, they should be all over the place. Long story short, deep stack give your opponent to make more mistakes and especially more costly mistakes, at least in terms of big blinds. And that may or may not be worth it to you. But no, if you're going to go play one tournament, then definitely buy in on time so you can get a nice full experience. You don't want to go there and buy in with 15 big blinds and flip and then leave. Because you got to realize, when you go and you buy in with 15 big blinds, you're going to get it in roughly flipping, and you're probably going to lose sometimes, well, half the time, then you're going to be out. Am I going to Texas to play? I am not. I'm like the Mr. Wonderful of poker. I tell people the hard truth. Try to be honest with all of you and give you good advice to help you become the best you can be. That's going to be it for today. I hope you enjoyed today's video. If you did, what is this? Is this a talk? I don't know what this is. This live episode. Good luck in your games. Have fun. Make the most of your opportunities. I know it's spring break for people with kids this week and next week or something like that. Enjoy that time. You won't get it back. Click the like and subscribe button down there. Let the YouTube overlords know that you like this. Enjoy yourselves. Have a great day. And I wish you all the best of luck.